IT businesses in Sacramento, California.
From somewhere deep in the cloud and the corners of the earth, this is the Killing It Podcast, with a focus on helping you make sense and dollars of all things IT, with your hosts, Dave Sobel, Ryan Morris, and Carl Polachuk.
Welcome to episode 87 of the Killing It
Podcast.
This is Carl, and I'm joined, as always, by Dave and Ryan. And we are having fun here. We just had an enjoyable hour.
This hour was not just shooting the stuff. This was work, man.
That's true.
Hey, I'll tell you what, we were riffing on marketing, and we will give everybody the one nugget that we just came out. And because I hadn't said it this way before, and I liked it, is that if you are only buying a surefire marketing thing, you are last. because you have not experimented. I actually like that one, and I'm going to remember that, reuse it elsewhere.
Well, you know, the classic line from marketing is that 50% of my marketing budget is wasted. I just don't know which 50%.
Right.
Exactly.
But it's those who try new things that eventually stumble onto the next big thing.
Exactly. You got to experiment to discover. And none other than Albert Einstein convinced all of us that there is no such thing as 10,000 wrong ways to make a light. There's one, but you got to go through the first 10,000 in order to get there.
that was Edison, not Einstein.
You are correct. See? Let's experiment and let's figure it out.
I'm going to keep trying those answers until I get it right.
Exactly. So anyway, we endorse new stuff. Speaking of endorsements, do we have an advertiser today?
We do. It could be you, listener. So this week, this space is brought to you by the space itself. It's available if you're interested in working with us. Across the podcast network, we've got over 10,000 monthly average listenership. You could get your message out to that group. Would love to talk to you. You can reach out to me, Dave, to talk about it. My email, dave@mspradio.com, or just visit the website and click on that contact us button.
And we won't even make you bid for it. Well, there's just a price.
There is just a price. We know how this system works. We'd love to talk to you.
All righty. Well, we have some super fun, interesting topics, mental topics, I guess, this week. The first one is the most mental, I think, on cheating detection. So this has become a huge, big thing in the pandemic. Everybody's isolated, so how do you proctor exams? And a lot of this software existed before, but it has added a layer of stress, actually, to a lot of students who now they have to basically test for the software rather than testing for the material. And, you know, I think everybody who's listening to this has learned that you have to give the Microsoft example on certain Microsoft exams, and it may not be the right answer, but it's the Microsoft answer. Well, that kind of stuff where you have to basically test for the exam software instead of the course material has become quite stressful for a lot of students. And so people are looking at, okay, what else can we do to avoid cheating and yet make sure that people can take the exams they need to advance their careers.
Well, and a technology investment too. Some of these were asking for like additional cameras put on tripods, looking at your hands, additional equipment. I mean, it is a level of complexity that is just over solving for the problem. I mean, that's what really is. And it shows, I mean, Ryan, I'm almost going to riff it to you on your riffs on micromanagement. It's like, we've so overcorrected on distrust as to make the problem worse here, trying to engineer a problem with technology, which also is then sending a very clear message to students of, we do not trust you. And that's a problem.
See, and that begins the conversation in exactly the wrong way with a student that causes more of the behavior you're actually trying to solve for. If you begin this interaction with, hey, let's just start by saying, I don't trust you. well, you know what? Cool. You don't trust me. I might take advantage of that. I might need to give you a reason to not trust me. Now, let me be very clear on this topic. We are the people who advocate for cybersecurity solutions, for privacy, for all of the information and data protection. And we are very, very keen on the idea of let's not have cheaters in our system. However, I live in a world where I fundamentally believe that the learning model must adapt to the new technologies and the new environment where we live. And it is undeniable that life is an open book exam. I carry with me a supercomputer in my pocket at all times. The Google answer is always there. Why do we want to require students to live in a world where you still have to memorize long lists of arcane facts? Is that a modern technology? Is that a modern skill that would actually mean that you are better, smarter, more effective than another person who needs to Google that stuff?
And use the practicality piece. I mean, what was striking to me about a lot of this was some of the, I mean, literally comical examples of things students had to do. Like if you need to go to the bathroom, you have to shout into the microphone, I need to go to the washroom and we'll come back quickly. It's stated in the directions. They're using like that's the way
and
you do it.
Some of them have a mirror behind them so that the camera picks up what they're looking at, and you can see that they don't have another screen open.
Right. And or like fears of alarms are setting, have had students to contort themselves. Students with dark skin are shining bright lights in their face to make sure the system, like worried the system won't recognize them. Other quote, other students have resorted to throwing up in trash cans. It's like, what are we doing?
If well, so 2 points. One is, you know, the thing that we've talked about many, many times on the show is the digital divide, right?
Yes.
And one piece of this technology is you have to have a rock solid internet connection, high speed for 3 hours to take some of these certification exams. If you can't do that, you got to go someplace where you can do that. And that adds another layer of stress. And the other thing is when, you know, Ryan, you talked about open book exams. I taught college many, many years ago, and I only gave open book exams. I literally gave people the questions on the first day of class, and then we taught towards that material, and then they needed to be able to put it into a blue book at the end of the class. They could bring entire books if they wanted to. They could call the Pope for all I care, but it had to be converted into that blue book.
Because the real value of knowledge is not just that you have instant recall of it, but that you know how to apply it, right? A, you know how to use it, and B, you can go find it, right?
Well, I certainly don't want to fly in an airplane where an engineer has just remembered the formula.
Exactly. I don't, there's different levels of learning requirements for different applications. However, years ago, I learned and have taught for many years in sales training environments. I do not need you to know everything. I just need you to know where to find the right things when they are necessary. And it has become, right, those that have been through some of my sales training stuff, long ago, we developed the methodology of your value proposition is I know a guy.
Yep.
Right. Like, and you can say that as Brooklyn as you would like to, right? Like, hey, Ryan, can you solve this problem with data networking? Do you know cybersecurity? And the answer is absolutely. I know a guy.
I know. Right? A guy.
Like, I know a guy. I can solve your problem. That this is life. And this is radically more expanded than just, did you memorize the answers to these 10 questions on a test? I am 1,000% in favor of all of this technology-enabled education, whether it's by requirement because of all the distance requirements we have right now, or because it's just better. I think technology can make education radically better than it has been, but not if you bring the nudge factor in up front. Like,
I'll also laugh and go, I've always said my superpower is not that I know everything, it's that I know how to find everything.
Exactly.
But actually, the takeaway I want people want, particularly technology implementers, as well as product designers, is look, how it got this far is beyond me at some level of insanity.
Oh, and the examples in this are just horrible.
The examples in this are horrible. And let me point something out. Not only was there a product designer that thought this was a good idea, there was an implementer that put it together and put it in place.
And a manager who paid for it. And I mean, there's many, many layers where somebody forgot that these are human beings And at the end of the day, we're supposed to help them in their career so they can move to the next level, so they can help all of the rest of us have a better society.
So I'll wag my finger a little bit and go, fail, fail, fail. And would encourage, encourage listeners on this who are thinking about these technologies. Like, sometimes you may want to raise your hand and say, this is a really bad idea. And by the way, you may think, I'm ruining revenue. I'm ruining a project. No, you're actually increasing your value, because what you're doing is you're keeping people from wasting money or doing bad implementations, and you will command a better price for your advice because people know you will keep them from wasting things.
Yeah, you have to wonder how many layers of advisors and quote unquote consultants didn't say, this is just stupid.
Right. Hey, this feels bad. When I think about your project, I feel worse about myself, not better. Like, learn the lesson, people, and move on. Okay, so in the spirit of that lesson that we're taking away, using technology to make people's lives better and not worse, we have found some fascinating examples of smart cities who are doing it well and doing some really cool stuff. The article that we're linking to here for the show gives a particular insight into 8 cities that they are featuring. Some of the examples seem pretty obvious. Some of the examples are dang near the Jetsons and Star Trek combined, right? Really cool things. Now, for years, I've been an advocate of this smart city application for technologies, and people have often pushed back on me and said, yeah, that's cool. When we can get there, eventually. Autonomous cars, it'll never happen. Smart cities, it'll never happen. You know what? Yes, it will. And the difference, the gap between what is whiz bang possible in science fiction and what is actually implemented now, it is not the design of a cool functional technology. It is the local implementation of a cool technology, which is why we are quite so passionate about it in this conversation here. I would love to hear from you guys some favorite examples that you see from what's in here and your advice on how do we accelerate the adoption of smart city technologies, because I think this stuff is cool.
I think my favorite piece of this is Mayor Frank Jackson from Cleveland, who, you know, you talk about all the whiz bang stuff and what's possible. And he's like, basically, we've moved past the point where we're looking at these things as toys. And now we're talking about citizenship and involvement and public safety and transportation. And, you know, a lot of stuff in what we love emerging technology on this show. But, you know, too much of emerging technology starts out as feature, feature, feature. And at some point, there has to be actual value, especially we want our cities to actually become more livable, more enjoyable, more representative. This stuff is possible, but you do have to get past the toy stage. So it's nice to see at least some of these cities are past the toy stage.
Well, and there's real money in this, too. I mean, so I covered on Business of Tech recently a study on the projection of this. And of course, this is one of those big industry numbers, right? That you go, oh, it's big and it gets bigger. But I mean, $96 billion in 2019 in spending to $327 billion by 2025. Okay, that's a pretty sizable amount. And yes, of course, the whole classic, like, go get your little small share of this very large number. I like these more to show where people are spending their money and their infrastructure dollars. What's interesting to me also was the fact that this is also an international opportunity. Some of the front runners for cities, not all of them are North American. 16 of the cities in this study's review of 26 were North American and Europe. The front runners, Amsterdam, Seoul, Singapore, and Copenhagen. The article we've linked here in the show notes also highlights these 8 cities in the US that are already investing in it. And what I've been saying a lot on this stuff is, remember, these are all city implementations. That is the definition of local government. And that is a very approachable government engagement. Lots of people think Fed. No. This is local engagement. That means they are generally using similar size providers to get these solutions.
See, and here's where this is you know, it, again, this is not just a good idea. It has been happening and we are accelerating dramatically, right? So I think it's been more than 20 years ago that I got involved in selling technology solutions to public safety in local municipalities, right? Starts with a handheld computer for issuing traffic tickets. I will apologize because I sold a lot of those things years ago and you might have received one of those from an officer. But then into rugged computers in cop cars and in utility applications, et cetera, right? Like cities have been spending on technology for a number of years and they have been historically notoriously disintegrated solutions, right? They just, like, the cops will buy one thing and they will buy another thing and they don't talk to each other and they are radically wasteful in terms of the way that they do this. But computers become in-car cameras, become light pole cameras, become fixed and mobile applications for surveillance applications, even into drones and license plate recognition. I am continuously bullish on this stuff. But it's not just for public safety, right? Like this, and this is the thing. If you've ever sold a rugged computer to a local police department, you understand the bureaucracy and the decision-making cycles and why this can be a little bit of a chore, but like smart streets, not just the street lights, but the materials from which we make the road surface and our ability to make them interactive and sensor enabled. Holy cow, this is fun and interesting. And you, Mr. Local Solution Provider, need to sell it. And believe me when I say, the local city IT department does not have the ability or the bandwidth to monitor and manage these things.
Well, and you know, that's interesting because the all of these are, as Dave said, local projects, right? So there's actual local money. But the beautiful thing is, like if you've been in this business for very long, it's really a lot of this is about automation and implementation. You know, for the automation part, some of it is, hey, how can we do this better? And they're actually looking for consulting and solutions. The implementation is literally, hey, we got a recipe. Can you provide these parts? Can you supply us with cameras? Can you put in these sensors? I don't even know what these things are. You know, they can't even spell IoT, but they're buying it by the billions. Yes, and so, you know, a lot of this is, you know, part of what we've done for our entire career is take some process and make it better with technology. And in a lot of ways, that's what this is. And all this stuff has to be secure. Has to be backed up.
You're going to make me defend digital transformation. See, like, because
you didn't know that this was digital transformation.
No,
we're learning the lesson that Dave is teaching us. I'm selling you a digital transformation solution. I just didn't call it.
Didn't call it that. Well, I mean, again, this is the way you just described it is exactly the way that I think about it, right? The like, this is using technology to make something better. That was something you did before. It's something you're doing ongoing. It's why I shake my fist. Right. It's why I shake my fist at digital transformation. It's like you're going to do it this one time. No.
See, like, but I will take it. I'll take it to a different level here because the product sale is an interesting and lucrative opportunity. There is real capability advancement that we can give, but one of the principal obstacles to making these things happen, it's not just the vision, it's not just the funding. It is, yeah, but once you put this in and turn it on, oh my God, the ongoing management, maintenance, integration, the monitoring, oh, that is an overwhelming permanent commitment for a municipal IT department. Sounds like a managed services opportunity that you could build an entire industry around. And as Carl said, the magic of these kinds of solutions is that they need desperately to be standardized and repeatable across jurisdictions. That just sounds like the recipe for a successful managed services business. Right. Don't customize these things, templatize them, and then monitor them.
Our industry started helping people turn paper forms into electronic forms about 30 years ago. We're not done yet. And cities just, I mean, every single penny that they spend on this kind of technology will save them money in the long run. And they just need partners who are good at it and who are willing to learn. And this is a pretty long article. So I recommend everybody read this, go take the time, but also just get your highlight around. Which of these technologies do you already have some understanding of, and where are your opportunities in your city?
Yeah, oh, totally. Because I mean, it was a long list of things, and by the way, many of them are not quote unquote sexy, right? Like they like some of them are water management and these very like, but you know what? In the boring stuff, there's lots of catch, because those are generally hard problems that are not necessarily giving the same attention. And there's lots of opportunity in that stuff.
Oh,
lots
absolutely.
Boring problems.
Some of the most interesting applications of this that we have seen. I actually did a case study a couple of years ago on a company that implemented a sensor-enabled waste collection system, right? Where the idea was dumpsters behind buildings, the city will send trucks around. And the way that they send the trucks around is, this is your route. This is my route. I go there on Tuesdays. You go there on Wednesdays. And yet, if you take the sensor and it just indicates, you know, don't just come here on Tuesday because it's Tuesday. Come here only when the bin is full. And the sensor will tell you when it is full and you can skip. And the city actually was able to document that they paid for the solution that they implemented in 11 months. The ROI was sub 1 year for a project that was about $500,000 or $600,000, all considered. Okay, now we're talking business sense, right? Like right. This is cool, even though I do not want to put on my business card, I sell sensor-enabled trash bins.
I'd much rather put on my business card, I'm involved in video games, which of course is going to be our third topic of the day today. And this one, this is like one of those ones that screamed me in so many levels. A new Oxford study has shown that video games are good for well-being. The people that play video games for long periods of time tend to report feeling happier than those who do not, the study has indicated. My initial reaction was, well, duh, you didn't ask me. I've been playing video games for years.
Well, this is... You know, I love the three things about this. I love that it's from Oxford. Okay, yes. So it's, to me, that just makes it a little more real than Cousin Larry's pretty good research department. Second, I love the fact that it was a very large survey, 3,200 people. And third, I love the fact that they actually looked at the people who are playing these games rather than, you know, in the past, there was this these tiny, tiny studies that basically speculated that if you play video games, you become violent and you kill people. And it turns out that very few people who play video games actually become mass murderers.
Well, and there's no direct, and let's be very clear, the research said there is actually no direct link between video game playing and violence. That right. is, there's, right. let's but be it, very but, clear, there's absolutely no link between the two for anyone
but,
who is
but
confused.
That's a stereotype that people have, and this literally just sweeps aside. And to be honest, I have not been a big gamer, but I'm literally looking at this and thinking, okay, they mentioned this, you know, specific game. I'm like, okay, if I play that game, will I actually be happier? Like, I might be willing to try this.
And well, actually, so as the resident gamer on the podcast, I will speak to the games of choice. So they were talking about Nintendo's Animal Crossing and EA's Plants vs. Zombies. These are the specific examples to do. Part of the reason is because they could get the data, particularly from Nintendo, was able to do the anonymization of the data to do the research on that. There is some thinking that these are social games and some of their building games versus, like, you know, other styles of games, sports or puzzle or shooter. Like, there's all these different classifications of games. So in this case, they were looking at a particular type of game where it is that social building style of game. In particular, Animal Crossing has been very popular during the pandemic because of that.
See, and that's where I want the thought process to go, right? Industry-wide as well as individually. It's not that you are playing a game. It is the style of game that you are playing and the way that it affects you. I can vouch from way too much personal experience that playing FIFA does not increase your happiness level until you are actually good at it. And when you play it online against other people who are much, much better than you, there's a certain amount of adult behavior that I have to learn to not chuck my controller because it has that impact, right? But There are games that are designed for that purpose. And video games have a level of impact or opportunity that is radically beyond card games, board games, things like that, just because of the richness of content, the depth of interactivity, and the way that you can design things specifically to cause intended impacts intellectually as well as emotionally. You can just do things with this technology that you can't do with any other medium. And I will say that good educators around the world have been validating that things like Sims, things that are kid oriented, they accelerate reading, learning, and comprehension. They accelerate math skills. We can improve creativity, right? There are educational benefits to these games radically beyond just, I'm going to be another nudge and limit your screen time just because screen time is always bad. No, it's not. Mindless screen time is terrible, but sometimes playing a game is the very best thing that a person, especially a child, can do.
Right. And from a business perspective, I'm remiss if I didn't point out the video game industry is bigger than Hollywood, like significantly bigger than Hollywood. And it is the growth area. You can see it in youth. I mean, I'm not at the level that you know, watches video games, but that's where a lot of this is also happening. Not only talking about like the games themselves, but from a consumption perspective, it is massive. Like this is a whole serious industry. There is a lot we can learn from these kinds of researches. Like first off, it is about reward. It is about the way that the user interface works. It is the way that the information is presented. There is a lot of stuff that you can take into your own business to think about this. Oh, and recognize that there is tons of investment being made.
Well, and from my perspective, you know, I always like to look at the relax, focus, succeed angle. If this is something that keeps people's brains active and helps them to truly relax, I mean, there is a point where, you know, you mix up the chemicals in your brain, a little dopamine here and there, and it can go a long ways to helping you to be overall more relaxed and recharge your batteries, even though you're not sitting in front of the TV doing quote unquote nothing. Like, you know, this may be a better recharger than sitting in front of a TV. I always like to see, when I see good research, I always want to see more research, like different types of games and different activities.
See, exactly, right? I will go back to an old classic thing in the field of communications and interactive media. Marshall McLuhan was famous for saying there are cold media and there are hot media. A cold medium is something that I sit and it happens to me, where a hot medium is something that requires my participation. And originally, many years ago, when he was talking about that concept, he was talking about the difference between reading a newspaper versus watching a television or listening to the radio. Television is a cold medium because you just sit there and it happens irrespective of your effort. Newspaper, you only get something from it if you participate and read and comprehend. Well, guess what? Video games are that times a thousand. The game only happens if you are interacting with it. And that's why I feel desperately different about this than just sitting and watching television. I enjoy television, right? I'm a Gen Xer. I was born and raised being able to go, ooh, that was fun to watch. But the games exist for the purpose of participating. And that's a completely different intellectual activity. It's something that you can really see the benefit of. And Carl, to your point, there's very established research on doing these kinds of stimulating activities to stave off Alzheimer's or dementia, or in the aging populations, games make a difference and they help you retain your marbles, right? So it's something that maybe society just needs to get over itself and stop it with the finger wagging on you watching.
Well, there's research that children that, you know, some kinds of games and some kinds that have better cognitive development, better hand-eye coordination. You know, but there are lots of areas of this that where the technology is used and can be used. So I'm going to link it a little bit back to that first story and kind of close out by saying, you know, where I think that there is a lot of interesting opportunity is in the combination of education and gaming. You know, there is an opportunity here for people that are reimagining both to find ways of delivering education. This is why gamification was a thing and it still is a thing, is because people do like to play. Play is a natural portion of the human experience, and there is benefit in taking that and applying it to these problems.
Well, and as a quick summary item, let me just say, if you're looking for a local business opportunity, esports in schools. Do a little homework, do a Google search. You will be blown away by how much money is going into that field. We'll come back and talk about that one later.
Very good. Well, let me just give one final comment and then we'll close. And that is my favorite Marshall McLuhan quote is that television is a medium because nothing on it is rare or well done. And that will do it for episode 87 of the Killing It podcast.
Thanks for tuning in to the Killing It podcast. Please share with your friends and tell everyone to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and all the podcast places. Join us next week and help us keep killing it in the technology business.